morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Norma Martinez.
And I'm Denise Rodriguez.
Denise, it's been kind of a wacky week in weather. We have seen warm weather, we've seen windy weather, we've seen rainy weather, we've seen cold weather. So what's the deal?
Right, exactly. Well, thank goodness. This is where I'm so thankful I'm not a meteorologist, where people ask me what is going on and they ask you to predict weather with computer models that are, you know, have their own parameters on there. But I've certainly been feeling those effects in my own garden. And I'm sure that our listeners are too. You know, we always talk about putting in our tomato plants really early in the year to, you know, kind of escape and be protected throughout our windy season and then be really established when that warm weather, almost hot weather, sets in by now. And my tomato plants have been struggling along. They got transplanted well. We had some really nice weather towards the mid to late March. And then all of a sudden it got cold and then it got windy and then it got hot and then it got cold and then it got windy again. So I do have some fruit set on my tomato plants. And I encourage you all to take a look at those. Look really closely underneath the leaves. There should be a small tomato fruit starting to form. I am seeing some flowering as well, not as prolific as in years past because tomatoes absolutely love that warm, almost hot weather. So just, you know, be patient. I don't think we're going to get a freeze anytime soon, but still this kind of cold days and windy days really kind of slow down that plant's progression. You know, they feed on those heat units and they're not getting them so much, especially when we have these fronts coming in like we did this past week.
And also we're going to see a bit of a windy weekend, but we haven't seen the kind of winds that brings that blowing dust and that sort of brings up a lot of allergies. So that could be a good thing, though we are seeing winds, but we're not seeing some really damaging winds.
Right, exactly. And it's really no matter how windy it is, even if it's breezy, if you didn't do any pruning on your trees and shrubs, it's a really good way to be able to go out there and check to see if there's anything that is dead or damaged that you can certainly remove right now, even though we say that'd be the ideal time to prune, but you always want to make sure that safety is your number one issue and take off any of those branches that are in fact dead or dying, because if they haven't leafed out by now, they're not going to leaf out for the entire season. They're dead.
Well, I'm guessing also the rain that we got earlier this week is going to be beneficial for the plants that are alive. You know, maybe some people who have vegetable gardens, maybe some people who are seeing maybe their perennial shrubs or their trees, maybe again, a little behind like where they normally would be, like how you were saying about your tomatoes. So maybe this rain is going to sort of help give everything a boost that we had.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, we definitely want to make, you know, it's nice to have that moisture in the air and everything. And especially if you want to transplant something or put in a bush or something into your landscape. I know that I have my Pam's Pink Honeysuckle that I got at the Native Plant Sale that has been sitting in a little area and hasn't gotten transplant it where it needs to be. But so, you know, these cooler temperatures do benefit that kind of to be able to transplant so they don't get so shocked when they get into their new home.
Well, we have some gardening tips for the month of May. And I know one of the questions that often arises is when's a good time to plant Bermuda or any other kind of warm weather turf grass. And this is the time.
Yeah, definitely. Bermuda grass breaks its dormancy when the temperatures reach about 85 degrees. So you can know that we've reached at least some of those temperatures earlier this spring. So they're starting to break that dormancy. You want to make sure that you go out there and you water them and really get a kickstart to those Bermuda grass lawns that you have on there. It's also a really good time to be able to test your irrigation system. Things are not the same as you left them in the fall and you turn it all off. You definitely want to do a little check on there and make sure that your sprinkler heads are not broken or they haven't changed any kind of direction. Sometimes it's easily to knock over those heads or move those nozzles off to the side. So do a great irrigation check and want to make sure that you water your Bermuda grass and just like anything else thoroughly. Give it a nice big soak. Let that 1 inch of water to your Bermuda grass so we can penetrate into that soil and really get it going. It's really the best way to be able to get a nice healthy lawn and a jump start for that. And then you can certainly talk about fertilizing what's next. So keeping that going and keeping it healthy and try to build that thick carpet of grass so that you don't have those invasive weeds coming in.
So if you are thinking of fertilizing your grass, what kind of fertilizer should you look out for? Is it okay just to go out and find the one that says grass fertilizer.
Yeah, there's so many different types of fertilizer out there. And really what you want to look for is what you're growing your grass for is for nitrogen. So that first number on your three number sequence on any kind of fertilizer is going to be your nitrogen content on that. And what you're looking for is, things that are going to have that release of ammonium. Nitrogen is probably the most common out there. Don't want to over apply that, because if you over apply that, you're essentially going to burn your grass. So follow the directions, and they usually give it pounds per square feet. So you want to make sure to follow that with your spreader. The one thing that I cannot stress enough is not to use a weed and feed product on your lawns. We've seen a lot of damage on trees and shrubs that are, adjacent to, close by, in the vicinity of a turf lawn, that get this herbicide damage because of this weed and feed. It's always best to, if you have a weed problem, then you treat the weeds only. And you need to fertilize it, then you want to use another product just to fertilize them. But don't try to combine them. It's not going to be worth your time or effort.
Well, there's a lot of people also who probably don't have Bermuda lawn specifically. Maybe they have St. Augustine, or maybe they have another type of grass. Or do those type of grasses do well? Because I know Bermuda typically is what's recommended for the area.
Yeah, Bermuda, because it's very drought tolerant. It's very, very resistant to wear and tear. It's also really salt tolerant as well. Your St. Augustine grass is tolerant to some shade. So you'll see that growing underneath areas that maybe wouldn't otherwise be able to have a Bermuda grass lawn on there. It can't stand full sun, though. It likes that partial shade on there. It has a much wider blade, but it also uses a little bit more water than Bermuda. So keep that in mind. Another option that people can use is the fescue. I've seen that. Even though fescue is also heat tolerant, but it does use much more water than Bermuda.
The thing I like about St. Augustine, it's funny, I have a Bermuda hybrid lawn, I think it is, but there's little patches of it that are St. Augustine. Somehow it managed to work its way into my lawn. But what I like about those little St. Augustine patches is that it grows really, really, really thick and tight together.
Right, exactly.
So it almost doesn't even give there's hardly any room for weeds to come out.
Exactly. And because it's a really wide leaf blade, it's really soft too, so you can certainly walk on that really comfortably barefooted as well. So yeah, it's a great thing to be able to use. If you're intent to putting turf grass in a shady area, St. Augustine's going to be the one that's going to grow.
There's really no store you can go to or nursery, right, to pick up turf grass if you're looking to apply. You really have to sort of go through a landscaper, no?
You have to go to the landscaper. You can also buy it over the counter at a garden center. They'll usually have pallets delivered very close to the weekend. Keep in mind that once that turf grass, because it's in these sheets, they're folded up and stacked on a pallet, they dry out very quickly. So you might want to, make friends with your local garden center and find out when they're going to get their delivery of turf grass and be able to buy it there. Because the longer it sits out, the longer that those roots are being exposed to that dry, warm air, and essentially they're going to start dying off.
Well, the hot weather is going to be upon us soon. So what kind of annuals maybe would be nice to add a good pop of color when normally we're not going to be seeing too much color in the heat?
It really depends on what your color palette is. Some really great bright yellow-orangey plants to look at are maybe calendulas. They're also known as pot marigolds, and they have a really great disc flower, a really nice bright shades of yellow and orange to go along with that. The Rebeckia, which is the black-eyed Susan, is also a really nice daisy-type flower as well. Gallardia, which is commonly known as firewheel, has the red and yellow streaks in there. And there's a lot of different types of Gallardias out there. They're very prolific self-seeders. So once flowers kind of die back, the seed head forms and you just kind of like let the wind or kind of help them sprinkle them around and they'll really take over a nice little area. And those are really appropriate for our area. Great summer color all summer long. So, think about those, and you can easily transplant, get any of those by seeds or transplants.
I've got a really nice showing right now of Coreopsis in my backyard. I know it's not an annual, it's a perennial,
right.
But they really did spectacular in my yard this year. And that's another really great plant that sort of also reseeds itself and adds a lot of color.
Right, right, exactly. So really go for that bang, and for those showy colors are really great. If you're looking also for something of a more of a perennial like your Coreopsis, and you like more of the purple colors, there's the Polyomintha. It's also very similar to the Texas sage, but it does handle shade tolerant too. So a little area maybe nestled in or around a tree.
Well, let's also talk about maybe some of our roses have, especially the climbing roses. Maybe they've already spent their blooms and they're probably not going to bloom again till next year. It's time to prune those.
Yeah, exactly. Then that's really what you have to wait for, those early spring bloomers. Then it's time to really cut back on your climbing roses. There's also some flowering shrubs like your red buds. As far as your trees, you want to make sure that you wait until after they bloom to go ahead and prune those off. And that's because they just bloom on that wood. So yeah, definitely make sure that you prune them back. They will continue to grow throughout the entire season, even though you won't get any blooms.
And also one thing you want to do to sort of keep color in your yard, if you do have a lot of flowering plants, is to do a lot of deadheading, you know, take off some of those spent flowers so that you can encourage the plant to keep flowering.
Yeah, exactly. The number one goal that all plants want to do is they want to grow, to flower, to set seed, to ensure the next generation. So if you want to promote the blooms, not so much the seeds in your yard, you want to make sure to do the deadheading. And that's just the purpose behind that. And the master gardeners are certainly already starting to deadhead, if you can believe it or not, in the rose garden, because they had such a spectacular spring this year. And they want to encourage those blooms all throughout the season. So if you want to learn about rose pruning, you can go out there and visit the master gardeners three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning. Stop by, say hello, and they'll be more than happy to walk you through it.
There's another plant that maybe has already seen its day for the season. Those are bulbs, you know, maybe tulips or hyacinths or, you know, any other kind of bulb that people might have planted to get some nice early spring color. Maybe those have already seen their best day. So when's a good time to maybe pull them out of the ground or trim them down to a stump so you can save them for next time? Because they're probably looking a little yellow right now.
Yeah, they are. The blooms are probably spent. But you want to make sure that you know, leave those green leaves on there, because essentially what those leaves are doing is they're photosynthesizing and sending that energy back into that bulb. So if you're intent on saving those bulbs for next year, you want to make sure to allow enough time for that recharging of that energy back into the bulb on that. And then after that, you can certainly clip them away and then they'll be done for the season.
We were talking about fertilizing turf. I know there's a number of times a year that it's probably best to fertilize. You don't want to be fertilizing like every month, right? So how often should we be fertilizing and when?
Yeah, definitely. It depends on really how much you want to maintain your yard and how much you want to spend time watering and clipping it and cutting it and doing all that maintenance that goes around with that. But you want to make sure that after the Bermuda breaks, dormancy is growing, you want to go ahead and hit it with some fertilizer. Right towards maybe the middle of the summer, towards maybe the end of July, then look to give it another bump of fertilizer. You don't need to have a really heavy fertilizer schedule. It's also important to know what's actually in your soil to begin with, which is the reason why we do recommend the soil sampling at least once every 3 to 5 years for homeowners, because they'll essentially see that they've been over-applying a certain nutrient or not. So that's a really good way to kind of get a baseline.
And so the master gardeners are the perfect contact for trying to get one of those soil samples.
Right? Yes, most definitely. They have that, and they're busy answering questions all around town and at their help desk.
And you can contact the master gardeners on their hotline at 566-1276, 566-1276. We have an email link to them as well on the Good to Grow page at ktep.org, where we also have our May tips posted. Well, we want to thank you so much for listening today, and thank you to Belinda Fernandez for engineering today's show. I'm Norma Martinez.
And I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And remember, a gardener's shadow is the best way to keep your garden good to grow.